here again, Amy. And what it means is that the movement continues, is that as we saw in Tennessee, Tennessee has set a very dangerous precedent for the nation with what happened to my friend here, Representative Zephyr in Montana, what's going on in Nebraska, and what's going to continue to happen as we see this rising tide of fascism and authoritarianism that's taken hold of our nation. We see this weaponization of decorum to silence dissent, to silence voices that make people uncomfortable. And that's really what they're doing, is silencing any voice of divergence from their dominant narrative. And so, you know, to be here in D.C., we're continuing to lift up this struggle as to nationalize what is going on, because it's not just going to impact us in Tennessee and in Montana, but it's really going to impact our nation, that an attack on one of us is an attack on all of us. And so, you know, we continue to push the White House, and I've been grateful to meet with many members here in the Capitol to let them know that from our state houses to the U.S. Capitol, we are facing some very dangerous trends in our democracy. I mean, connecting what happened to us to January 6th, which was an attempt to stop an election, to stop democracy. And so we have to stand together, and we must show that we are not going to be divided and conquered, but that we're united in our struggle for multiracial democracy and uplifting voices that have been often pushed to the margins.
Justin Jones, you were elected to be state representative in November, but before that, you were well-known in Nashville, Black Lives Matter activist. In fact, you had taken on the House Speaker before. You're now calling for Cameron Sexton's resignation. But you had pushed and successfully pushed for the removal of the bust of Nathan Bedford Forrest from the state capitol rotunda. Nathan Bedford Forrest, the first grand dragon of the Ku Klux Klan born in Tennessee. You ultimately won your battle, but Cameron Sexton voted against removing the founding grand wizard of the Ku Klux Klan's bust from the state capitol. Is that right? Were you able to hear that question, Justin?
I just missed the last part.
Oh, I was just asking. You won the removal of the bust of the founding Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, Nathan Bedford Forrest, from the state capitol rotunda. The House Speaker, whose resignation you continue to call for, voted against removing his bust, Ku Klux Klan born in Tennessee. Is that right?
That's correct. And what we're seeing in Tennessee is this battle of us representing a new South, you know, the South that does not worship symbols to white supremacy and the Confederacy and racial terror. But we are trying to represent a new South that represents multiracial democracy and human rights, a South that affirms human dignity across race, across sexuality, across immigration status. You know, we want to say that, you know, the Southern segregationists had a saying that the South will rise again. We stand as a new generation and say that the South will rise anew, and that the South is a front line in this battle for democracy, and in this battle against white supremacy and transphobia and homophobia and xenophobia and misogyny and economic exploitation. We represent this new voice, and that's really what they're trying to expel, Amy, was not just us as individual lawmakers, but what we represent and this vision of the future that they're so fearful of, because it means one in which all of our voices are heard and all of our people are treated with respect and protected, and not just the voices of a small white power structure of men of a particular religion and particular economic status who've dominated our politics for so long.
Can you talk about the state legislature trying to give immunity to the gun manufacturers? This vote right after the mass shooting in Nashville, the city you represent, that killed 3 9-year-olds and 3 adults.
I mean, it is immoral that the only gun law that we passed in the light of a shooting that took the lives of 3 9-year-olds and 3 adults, and it was not the first mass shooting in Nashville as well. We had the shooting 5 years ago last week at the Waffle House in Nashville. And so what they decided to do was say, let's not protect kids, as we've been asking, but let's protect firearms manufacturers from lawsuits. This is how immoral it is that we're dealing with people who care more about the profits of the gun industry than they do the lives of our children, than they do the safety of our community. And it's immoral, and it shows where their allegiance is to these special interests. It shows the corruption of money in our political system, that's the first action they take in light of a mass shooting was to pass that law and also to expel the two youngest black lawmakers. This is the way that they are moving. And so it's not democracy. It is mobocracy. It is terror for our communities. And it is insulting to the victims of this mass shooting and their families that is the step forward that they're taking. And also to armed teachers as well. That was the other proposal they had. And it is so hurtful for our people who are grieving still and demanding that we pass common sense gun laws that the majority of Tennesseans across the political spectrum support. Red flag laws, a ban on assault weapons, universal background checks, and safe storage. That's what we should be passing.
Before we bring Representative Zephyr back into the conversation, I wanted to ask you now about what's happening with you and Justin Pearson. You're back in as state representatives, defying the Republican supermajority. But you now have to go through an election, both in Nashville and in Memphis, the two of you, because you were expelled. How much does this cost? When is this going to happen?
Yes, so we have two elections. We have a primary in a month, and we have a general in August. And it's all being, you know, at the expense of the taxpayer to run again. And I know a Republican just announced that they're running against me. And so we're going to be pushing and we're going to be running an active campaign because we know that this is not just about us, but it's a referendum on democracy, Amy. And that's what we're going to be fighting for and pushing for, is that their attempt to expel us was an attempt to make a spectacle of authoritarianism, that if you dare dissent, if you dare challenge the dominant power structure, this is what will happen to you. But I also want to say, too, is that though Pearson, Representative Pearson and myself are back, we're still not being allowed to speak on the House floor. We're being shut down on the House floor. We still have not been given committees again. So they've stripped our committees from us. And so they're doing everything they can to make us feel like second-class members, though our community sent us back there after being expelled to represent them unanimously in the Memphis Council and in the Nashville City Council. And so it is extreme what's going on. You know, we're still unwelcome in the people's house. But like I told somebody, we're not there to make friends with them. These are our colleagues. We're there to represent the voices of our constituents, you know, some of the most diverse districts in the state of Tennessee who deserve to be heard. And every time they silence us, they silence our constituents. And that's why we must fight so hard against these authoritarians and these fascists who've taken hold of our state government.
Well, speaking of being silenced, that brings us to bring in Democratic Montana State Representative Zoe Zephyr of Missoula, Montana, the first transgender woman ever elected to the Montana legislature. The Republican-led state legislature has now banned her from the House floor and also forbid her from speaking there. I'm wondering, is this the first time the two of you as state legislators are publicly speaking together?
I believe we spoke together a couple days ago, briefly, but this will be the second time.
Well, I want to know, first, Justin Jones, if you could address state legislator Zoe Zephyr to talk about what this has meant for you and your reaction to what happened to her. And is there any move for state legislators around the country to band together, the silenced who refuse to remain silent?
Yeah, definitely. Well, Representative Zephyr, we talked on the phone of the day of this horrible and moral decision to censure her. And just knows that we stand together. And as I said that night, and as I said that day, an attack on one of us is an attack on all of us. And so we are united from Tennessee to Montana to Nebraska to Florida, as I was just talking to some lawmakers there, against this trend toward authoritarianism that's silencing voices who need to be heard. And if you look, you know, if you look at what we represent, it represents the future of our politics. People who are proximate to these issues should have a voice in challenging them when it comes to the safety of our communities, when it comes to the well-being of our communities, when it comes to what democracy should be in our states. And so Representative Zephyr knows that I'm standing with you, that whatever I can do to show up in solidarity, to push back and let them know that we're not going to be divided, that we see this as a united struggle, that we see this as a struggle in which solidarity, deep solidarity matters, and in which resisting together against these forces of authoritarianism is going to be something that we continue to do nationwide. And so thank you for your courage. And I'm just so grateful to see when you walked out, you had that same feeling of dignity. You walked out with your head held high. And because we know that we are on the right side of history. And so it's just beautiful to see those photos that you were unbowed, that you were pushing forward, and that you did not let them shame you, but you saw that the community stands with you, the people of this nation stand with you, and will continue to push forward unafraid and unbowed against these forces.
And State Representative Zoe Zephyr, if you could respond and talk about the effect it had on you, this is right before you were censured, seeing Justin Pearson and Justin Jones being expelled from the state legislature. Did you at that point have any sense what was going to happen to you?
I didn't. But I think, you know, what people keep saying is courage is contagious. When you watch people stand up for what is right, to defend their community, when marginalized groups come together and say, as Representative Jones has said, an attack on one of us is an attack on all of us. When you see people stand up, it drives you to stand up similarly. And that's also why, as one of the first groups to come out in support of me was Montana's American Indian Caucus, who said, this is an inappropriate, undemocratic attack on Representative Zephyr. And they know that firsthand because they've experienced that. And the attacks on the Native American community in our state and across our country goes way back before the attacks on trans people that we're seeing today.
And Zoe Zephyr, what has been the response of the people who elected you? I mean, as I was saying around Tennessee, it's not as if you're fired from a store that you're working at. You were elected. And so you have these other representatives who are saying the city of Missoula cannot have their elected representative speak. What does it mean for them? And when does this banishment end?
So that has been, you know, I've seen pride from my community. They have said, thank you so much, first and foremost. Thank you for standing up. Thank you for saying the things we elected you to say, to hold the powerful accountable to the harm that they do. And then I've also seen them express frustration when they copy me on their messages to Republican leadership, saying, you're taking our voice. They're sending that message in emails. They showed up at the Capitol to send that message and say, you're taking away our representation, and that's not democratic. And going forward, I showed up yesterday ready to do the work as best I can, and I am going to do everything in my power to make sure that the people who elected me, the 11,000 Montanans who elected me, have representation in the People's House.
And let me ask you, Justin Jones, about the anti-trans laws being passed in the Tennessee legislature. The Biden administration has filed suit against Tennessee's ban on life-saving care for transgender youth. Can you talk about that and the position you took?
Yeah, I mean, all session we've been challenging the slate of hate. Tennessee has had 27 anti-LGBTQ laws this session, more than any other state, being pushed in our legislature. Laws to ban drag shows, attack trans youth's health care, to challenge equality in marriage. I mean, it's just been this very hateful agenda that we saw. And we've resisted it at every step, even before we were expelled. We were, you know, myself, Representative Pearson, Representative Johnson were some of the most vocal voices challenging this anti-LGBTQ agenda. And so, you know, we're glad that the federal government is intervening and is challenging that law that will harm our youth, and which we shared on the House floor. This is harmful to the youth of Tennessee, and it's a very dangerous policy for these lawmakers to try and be doctors, as they often try and do. And so we have challenged it. And we know that this challenge of attacking the LGBTQ community, of attacking people of color, of attacking immigrants, is really an attack on democracy, is really an attack on our future and the futures that we represent. And so we are, once again, fighting together, united in this struggle against those who would try and scapegoat members of our community, against those who would try and use members of our community as punching bags to distract from their feelings. failures, from the, you know, to distract from their failures, that the fact that in states like ours, the majority, you know, 1 in 5 children live in poverty. The majority of people are struggling to get by because they're waging a culture war instead of waging a war on poverty, instead of waging a war to protect our communities from this wave of environmental injustice that is plaguing our communities, and of a corporate attacks that are really denigrating our people, who have to struggle between getting groceries or paying for their prescriptions. I mean, this is what we're dealing with, is really an attempt to divide and conquer. And we will not cooperate with that. We will not accept that, because we know that what are the real issues in our community. And that's not an issue that they're making. Manufacturing to distract from their failures is not the issues that we should be focused on.
And Representative Jones, in your state, in Tennessee, the Grammy-winning rapper and singer Lizzo recently invited dozens of drag performers on stage during a Knoxville concert, protesting Republicans' efforts to ban public drag performances in the state. Your governor, Tennessee Republican Governor Bill Lee, signed the measure into law last February, but it was blocked by a federal judge the following month, who argued it was too vaguely written. Were you there?
I was not at the concert, but I was on the House floor fighting that bill when it came before. And I said, actually, 3 weeks before the mass shooting happened at Covenant, on the House floor, I said, why are we focusing on drag shows with this false narrative that they're danger to our youth? The real danger to our youth, the number one cause of death in our youth that we should be focused on, are mass shootings, is gun violence. And I said this before the shooting even occurred. Because we knew what the threat to our youth was. We know what it is. And they tried to make drag shows an issue, which has never been an issue. The lawmakers who presented this bill were just simply trying to instigate hate against a community, the LGBTQ community. And so we're grateful for artists like Lizzo who've come to our state. But we live in a state where we pass more lawsuits than laws, to be quite honest, Amy. And so we knew that this was unconstitutional. We said it in committee and on the House floor. And a lot of the laws we're seeing are going to continue to be challenged, hopefully, in the courts to overturn this arrogance of a supermajority that passes laws targeting vulnerable communities and marginalized communities.
Representative Zoe Zephyr, we're going to end with you. You know, I remember 10 years ago, or maybe it was a little more or a little less, where every state was putting a referenda or measures on election day or before against same-sex marriage. And the point of that was they couldn't get people out, enough people to vote for conservative candidates, but that would rev people up to go to the polls, and then they would vote for the conservative candidates. Well, that was a movement at the time, and it completely failed. Conservatives, as well as progressives and liberals, that's not their issue anymore. And so now you have this issue of drag shows or trans laws. And I'm wondering if you could end by talking about what this means in your community to be used in this way.
I think you hit that perfectly. You know, when we see attacks on LGBTQ people, whether that was back in the 90s or today, it's trying to drum up fear, stoke and other a community. But the fact is, trans people, we live in our communities. We are known in our communities, and we are loved broadly in our communities, which is why this effort ultimately is going to fail. Because when they're attacking trans people, they're not just attacking us. They are attacking our loved ones who care about us, our coworkers, our community members who care about us. And in the same way that other marginalized groups are rising up and saying this isn't acceptable, that's what we're seeing with our communities coming up and saying, no, you can't do this to trans people. We love them. We care about them. And it's ultimately why, even though we're seeing these attacks in the legislatures and they're going to fail in the courts, they've already lost in our communities because we're loved.
Democratic Montana State Representative Zoe Zephyr, the first transgender woman ever elected to the Montana legislature. She has been banned by the Republican-led legislature from the House floor, forbidding her from speaking. I want to thank you for being with us from Helena. You represent Missoula. And Justin Jones, Democratic Tennessee State Representative Nashville, recently reinstated after the Republican supermajority heavily gerrymandered gerrymandered House of Representatives voted to expel him and his colleague Justin Pearson. They were reinstated by their own communities until there's a special election. Thank you both for being with us. Coming up, we look at President Biden's plan to send U.S. nuclear-armed submarines to South Korea. Stay with us.
This is my island in the sun, where my people have toiled since time begun. I may sail on many a sea, her shores will always be home to me. O island in the sun, built to me by my father's hand, all my days I will sing in praise of your forest waters, your shining sand. As morning breaks, the heaven on high, I lift my heavy load to the sky. Sun comes down.
Island in the Sun by Harry Belafonte. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we end today's show looking at the crisis on the Korean Peninsula, on Thursday, South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol addressed a joint session of the U.S. Congress and warned nuclear threat posed by North Korea. On Wednesday, Joe Biden pledged to deploy nuclear-armed submarines to South Korea for the first time in 40 years and to establish a new bilateral nuclear consultative group where the United States would involve officials from South Korea in nuclear planning operations targeting North Korea. On Wednesday, President Biden issued a stark warning to North Korea.
Look, a nuclear attack by North Korea against the United States or its allies or partisans or partners is unacceptable and will result in the end of whatever regime were to take such an action.
President Biden was speaking in the Rose Garden at a news conference with the South Korean president to talk more about his visit to Washington and tension on the Korean Peninsula. We're joined now by Christine Ahn, founder and executive director of Women Cross DMZ, a global movement of women mobilizing to end the Korean War. Christine is also the coordinator of the campaign Korea Peace Now, speaking to us from Hawaii. And we thank you for being up in the middle of the night for this conversation, Christine. Talk about the significance of the meeting at the White House between the U.S. and South Korean presidents and what President Biden has promised.
Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me on. The announcement that the U.S. would send nuclear-armed submarines to South Korea is a very provocative and dangerous move. It's the first time that U.S. nuclear weapons have been on or around the Korean Peninsula in 40 years. In fact, most Americans have no idea that the nuclear crisis actually began with the U.S. bringing nuclear weapons in South Korea from 1956, 3 years after the signing of the ceasefire, and had them there up until George Bush Sr. So that is not only a provocative act directed at North Korea, but also at China. And this is actually throwing fuel into already into a fire that has been increasingly dangerous. There have been massive military exercises between the U.S. and South Korea this spring, all last year. Last year, I think North Korea conducted 90 missile tests. And the situation is just getting even more dangerous. There is a three-star general, Dan Leaf, who says of all the conflicts currently taking place right now, whether it's between U.S. And China over Taiwan or the Russia-Ukraine war, that the Korean Peninsula is perhaps the one that may be the closest to a nuclear war. So it is a very dangerous moment, and the fact that the U.S. will be sending U.S. nuclear submarines to the Korean Peninsula, and for Biden to make such a statement that is akin to Trump's Fire and Fury era, where he threatened to totally destroy North Korea, this is a wake-up call, I think, for the American people and obviously for South Koreans who feel that Yoon is basically drawing the Korean Peninsula on the front line of the U.S. war against China.
Hmm. Well, Christine Ahn, this actually is being billed as a compromise. As part of the agreement, President Yoon renewed a pledge not to pursue the development of a South Korean nuclear arsenal. Your response?
Well, it is in the sense that there is growing concern in South Korea for its own domestic nuclear weapons program in light of the tactical nuclear weapons coming from North Korea or the program in North Korea. But I think the problem is it's not addressing the underlying issue, which is that the Korean Peninsula is continually at a state of war. This is actually the 70th anniversary of the ceasefire. This July 27th marks 70 years that the U.S. commander, the North Korean commander, and the Chinese representative from the Voluntary People's Army signed the armistice agreement where they committed to halting the war, but they never actually followed up with their commitment, which was to return within 90 days to negotiate a peace settlement. So what we're facing is this continual militarization. South Korea now is the sixth largest military spender in the world. The U.S., we know, is the world's largest. Our budget approaching $1 trillion, more than the next nine countries combined. And it is an unsustainable crisis. And I think the way that the narrative of deterrence is as if there isn't violence, as if they are preparing to prevent violence in the future, when in fact we know violence is taking place right now, whether it's the division of families, whether it's the suffering of the North Korean people, whether it's the ongoing investment in militarization that should be otherwise invested in things that make us secure. I mean, I think about, I'm here in Hawaii, and we're facing the Red Hill crisis, where, you know, this militarization means we are polluting Oahu's aquifer. And this is the jet fuel that will basically fuel the ships or the bombers that will go and wage wars in Asia. So we have to break down this mythology that this is actually what is making us secure, when in fact, what we need to do is negotiate a peace agreement. And that is gaining traction among people from the military to nuclear scientists to, you know, people like President Carter. We have to normalize relations with North Korea to achieve the things that we want.
Can you talk about this mobilization to end the Korean War scheduled for the end of July, and also talk about China's response to all of this?
Well, first, just since we're short on time, I want to make sure that we are mobilizing hundreds to come to Washington, D.C. I hope, Amy, you will be there, or somebody from Democracy Now! But July 27th marks the 70th anniversary of the armistice. And we are saying it's time to end this war that inaugurated the military-industrial complex for the United States. It set forth the U.S. to become the world's police. And it has been the war that has maintained this constant threat on the Korean Peninsula. So we are gathering multiple organizations, faith-based, Vets for Peace, and Korean-American Coalition. So we are gathering. The website is koreapeaceaction.org, and we'll be having a congressional briefing with our peace champions. We want to also raise awareness that there is the first ever Peace on the Korean Peninsula Act. It was reintroduced by Brad Sherman in the last Congress. We had nearly 50 co-sponsors of that bill.
We have 10 seconds, Christine.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, Amy, there is momentum now to transform this state of war into a permanent peace. And that's where we need Americans to recognize this is America's oldest war. It's on our responsibility to bring closure to this war.
Christine Ahn, founder and executive director of Women Cross DMZ, a global movement of women mobilizing to end the Korean War. Also the coordinator of the campaign Korea Peace Now. That does it for our show. On Saturday, Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez will be speaking at 10 a.m. at American University in Washington on an all-day conference titled In Search of a New U.S. Policy for a New Latin America, Burying 200 Years of the Monroe Doctrine. Check democracynow.org for details. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to Looking at Lyme on CJSF's Speak Up, and I'm your host, Sarah Cormode. Looking at Lyme is a podcast all about Lyme disease. My own journey back to health motivated me to understand the complexities of the illness, testing, diagnosis, and treatment. In each episode, you'll hear from experts in the field of medicine, science, and outdoor education. Together, we learn about topics such as neuroplasticity, pain management, co-infections, outdoor safety, and tick surveillance. You can find out more by visiting our website, lookingatlyme.ca, or following us on Twitter or Instagram. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to hear news.